You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Wednesday, I speak to Skunk Lowe, who's a portfolio manager at PSG Wealth Old Oak in Cape Town. And when I say always on a Wednesday, Skunk, we haven't spoken now for probably 5-6 weeks. Firstly, it was your fault. Latterly, it's been my fault. And one of the things that we sometimes say during quiet times, before we go on air, you say, Lindsay, let's just make this 7-8 minutes because there's really nothing to say. That's not the case today, Skulk.
No. Fantastic speaking to you again, Lindsay.
Likewise.
Thanks for having me again. It's been a big, not just week. I mean, it's been a massive 2025 thus far. And the past 24 hours it went from bad to worse. But we'll chat about that.
Yeah, I don't know where to start really. We could get into politics, but I'll leave that for my blog. But the simple fact is that Trump has marked his territory. The tariffs became effective today. China has retaliated. Markets have retaliated as well. And we'll talk about the markets in a second. But we may as well get it out the way, first of all, because while I was lying around with nothing to do, watching telly and laptops and things, I did notice the gold went to 31.50. Now, you can correct me on the high it went to, but I thought of you. And every time it made a new high, I thought of Skulk Lowe. You must have been jumping through hoops.
I was extremely happy. I sort of look at the past 24 hours and I still believe that the best is yet to come.
Good.
And that is crazy to think. But I mean, yeah, if we've seen what happened, I mean, it's mind boggling to watch this, watch this, you know, play out. Now, I often get asked the question, what is a black swan event? You know, how can you sort of identify a black swan event? I think that's the whole thing about a black swan event is there's no indicator. It sort of happens and nobody sort of foreseen, you know, this happening. Did we know that we're going to have tariffs? Hell yes. We always knew the 20th of January, President Trump will start his second term. He's made it blatantly clear, you know, while he was canvassing for votes, that he's gonna look at tariffs. He's gonna look at, you know, a few other things, but tariffs was the main thing. So it's not a surprise. But I think nobody, and when I say nobody, Lindsay, think to yourself. I mean, we've had the announcement last week, and this caught everyone off guard. It wasn't just sort of this one told that one and that leaked to that media outlet or that media outlet, and people were sort of prepared. You know, it's like our budget, we're going to see a VAT increase. It was sort of leaked out before it was actually mentioned. This was remained shut, hush, hush. And then they made the announcement and it sort of shocked the market.
Because Trump says things and then it's sort of forgotten about. I can give you two very good examples of him saying things that he's just blurted out. I won't tell you what they are, but it's a classic example. He says, he thinks something when he's giving a speech and then afterwards he thinks, yeah, that was a good idea, but it's not going to work, like Gaza being the Riviera. I mean, that's a classic one. What's he talking about? There's no Riviera being built in Gaza. It's all forgotten already. It's pathetic. So I think people didn't realize that he was actually going to do it this time. And of course, now he can't go back on his word because he looks foolish. He looks weak. And there's nothing more galling to President Donald J. Trump, the 47th president of the United States of America, than being made to look foolish and that he has given in. He won't do that. He'd rather be ousted midterm than be told that he was wrong. There's two words in his vocabulary that don't exist. One is sorry and the other is wrong.
It's you're 100% right. There's that saying that says, you know, stop digging when you're in a hole. And I sort of see him standing in this hole, just getting deeper and deeper. I mean, China coming out and saying that, well, that they're going to retaliate that, I can't remember what it was originally, you know, 30-odd%, and then it went to 60%, and then went, and then everyone just retaliated. And immediately, it's sort of before the announcement actually land on Trump's desk, he retaliates immediately, 104% tariffs for goods coming from China towards the US. So let's just put this in perspective, Lindsay, because this is actually just massive. We had this meeting this morning, and one of my colleagues, a Teams meeting, a Zoom meeting, one of my colleagues had he sat there, and then the next thing he took this Make America Great Again cap, put it on his head, and everybody naturally laughed. And one of my mates actually said, well, one of the colleagues turned around and said, well, just do me a favor, just turn that cap around. Tell me where that cap is made, made in China.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, let's just take a harder issue. The purebred, I think the purebred of purebred companies, there's few companies like Ford and, but one of the purebred companies, is Apple. Apple is a US thoroughbred company. Well, most of the, let's call it more or less 200 million iPhones that they produce every year, most of those iPhones are produced in China.
China, yes, exactly.
So now they've already not looked at the release of the iPhone 17, and there's a few calculations being done, and this is just whisper numbers for now. But they're already talking about, as we now sit here, that these iPhones will need to increase 40%. In price to still make it profitable. Now that's crazy. That's just iPhone. So look at this thing. Now you ask your question, will the people around the world, will people be, you know, not just, you know, able, will they be willing to pay 40% more for
of course they won't be. At some point, of course, there's always iPhone loyalists,
sure.
Apple loyalists, but they won't be able to absorb that sort of price increase for what essentially is, it's a useful luxury, but a luxury nonetheless. There are other phones that do similar things, not quite as good, in my opinion, as the iPhone. But anyway, he lies. This is the other point. He put out on Truth Social today when China announced the 84% increased tariff. He said, this is the best time to come to America. You won't pay any tariffs like Apple are doing. I don't see Apple doing it because you know what? You've got these almost like labor camps where the Apple workers stay and they produce the components for the iPhone, and then they assemble. You don't just get an iPhone, it pops out of a machine and you bung it on a ship and it goes over. It has to be assembled, and it's quite a skillful job, and Chinese workers work 6 days a week for wages that would be sneered at in the United States of America. So let's say that Apple said, okay, everything's being shipped out. It's going to cost us a couple of hundred billion just to dismantle it and send it all over and all that sort of nonsense that occurs when you change location of a giant factory. When you get to America, who's going to do this job? Migrant workers are being kicked out. Americans, even if they were available to do it, would do it for maybe four or five times the price that the Chinese workers do it, and they're unionized, and they only work 5 days a week. It would be a disaster. 40% might be a similar figure that the cost would increase in America, because you've got some hick from Mississippi with a corn pipe and a pair of dungarees trying to put an iPhone together. Come on now, Scout. He's lying. And he also lied about the Honda factory in Indiana. Honda produces the Honda Civic original in Indiana. Now they've got this brand new Honda Civic coming through. And Trump says they're building the biggest, most sophisticated factory to produce the new Honda Civic. And they came out and they said, we never said that. We haven't made that announcement. We're not doing it. He's lied again. It's extraordinary. My prediction, he will not last a full term. Not only are his powerful allies ganging up against him now, behind his back, in little corners and discussing strategy, but he's galvanized the Democratic Party. They still haven't got a good leader. But if you watch Bernie Sanders tonight at a CNN town hall, if you're up at that time in the morning, which I sometimes am, it'll be very interesting to see the mood in the Democratic Party. I mean, even if Colonel Bernie Sanders can make a splash, that really tells you what the Republicans are suffering at the moment. He won't last 4 years.
Republicans are already turning against him. I mean, you had Ted Cruz already yesterday or 2 days ago made it, you know, verbally 100% clear that he's totally against. You can see more and more, you know, these. And I get the feeling he just went and did this. I don't think he's properly consulted. I think that the whole decision-making process and structures will be changed. I've got no doubt in my mind. I foresee them getting together very, very soon, because the way this is heading for a massive, 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 massive crash. I mean, a lot of people think, you know, the one thing that I've been seeing, because when you look at the VIX for the past 30 years only went above 50% three previous times. Now, I'll use that. It's 1998. We had the Asian crisis crash, that Russian-Asian crisis crash.
Yes.
Then 2008, we had the world financial crisis crash. That was the other time. Then more recently, 2020, COVID crash. We've seen the VIX go above, you know, 50%. As we sit here, the VIX is trading, you know, above 50% for the fourth time in 30 years. And the previous three times, every time it actually were trading above these 50% levels, was most probably one of the best buying opportunities. Well, why am I not feeling comfortable, you know, calling this a buying opportunity with those type of indicators? Well, the mere fact that we don't know the outcome yet. We don't know where this tariffs will be ended, because we see China going back and forth. We've heard Spain, you know, saying earlier today that, well, we're going to start talking, you know, to China, because it's a little bit closer and it might be more convenient. What we're seeing, Lindsay, is we're not only seeing the likes of emerging markets or the non-allies turning against Trump. We're now starting to see allies of the U.S. turning against Trump's tariffs. Yes. We're starting to see actual Republicans now starting to turn against Trump and his tariffs. So where will this end? Well, if they don't stop him or go sit down and say, let's really start negotiating with people, because even if you're not to go back and say, okay, guys, okay, I'll tell you what, we will be imposing a blanket 10% tariffs on all countries. I still think that there will be some sort of, or if you did that, there would have been some sort of win for the US, because most of the countries will be sort of, they'll be unhappy, but still happy. They say in any negotiation process, you know, both parties should always be a little bit unhappy. Now, if you impose a blanket 10%, I think both parties will be sort of a little bit unhappy, but I think Mr. Market will see it as a win. Currently, I don't see any winners. I'm sorry. So I'm not yet at the position to be looking to buy the dips.
No, I don't think so either. And you're quite right. And what has happened on that so-called Liberation Day, or many people called it Obliteration Day, he just sat down with a few people and they said, we've got this press conference tonight, let's get on with it, let's get a really simple formula. So we take this number and that number, divide it by two, that's what we're going to charge them. Now just look at Madagascar, just off the coast of your lovely country. And it's one of the poorest countries in the world. It sells spices, this is very simplistic, but it sells spices and vanilla. He whacked a 47% tariff on that. Now, what is that? He doesn't. They don't export anything to America apart from what I've just mentioned. They can't import anything very much anyway, because they're too poor to do so. So they're not going to whack a tariff on him. I mean, why Madagascar? Why not be like the European Union and actually be considered and measured if you are going to retaliate, just like Ursula von der Leyen has done today. And she's targeted certain industries and been very reasonable about the tariffs. She's got to do something, otherwise she looks weak as well. But Trump just doesn't care. He doesn't think. He goes and plays golf. Very badly, I understand.
Well, I don't know. I still believe that the current approach has been extremely aggressive. Well, now we know he's aggressive. But as we currently stand, I do think that this is not going to be good for the U.S. And the, you know, the train of thought, you know, the main theory
yes.
around what we've seen over, let's call it, the past week was this is actually a big plot. And, you know, the plot was if they come out really strong, aggressive, we're not eventually going to end with these tariffs that he's imposing or proposing. I mean, we're going to end with something very softer, but we're going to then eventually see a massive shock to the market. We're going to start seeing investments moving out of risky assets, a risk-off scenario. And as investors sell out of equities, where do they go to? Oh, easy. They usually go to bonds.
But have they, Skelk? No.
Well, I'll get you that now. Because remember, they've got these more than $9 trillion worth of debt maturing this year. And they need to refinance this debt. Well, 5 years ago when they floated most of these bonds in COVID, we had the 10-year yield trading more or less half a percentage. Now today it's trading at 4.5%. And I know most of it is not the 10-year yield. There was a lot of investments being floated earlier, but $9 trillion. If they can create sort of a shock to the market, get all the investors to move from risky assets to U.S. bonds, refinance the debt. All wealth ends well, and then the past 24 hours happened. Suddenly, you know, investors are running out of U.S. bonds. Now this, what does the saying in Afrikaans go? Slim fang se baas.
What does that mean?
It's just, you actually think you're smart, while smart just, you know, the slim fang se baas, smart just caught his boss. It just says you're too smart for yourself. And I really think they're way too smart for themselves currently. I think this is potentially a movement away from the U.S., not just in terms of, you know, assets, investments, bonds, but also as reserve currency. We know the reserve currency has been twiddling downwards from the 70-odd% levels to the 60% levels. I think this could hurt the U.S. They can't afford to go into a recession. We had former Treasury Secretary? What is he?
Larry Summers.
Larry Summers.
Yeah.
That's it. He came out. I don't know if you watched that interview today.
I did. I saw him being interviewed yesterday. He was scathing, wasn't he?
Yesterday. Sorry. Yes. Yeah. He looked. He didn't look as strong as I remember. Larry Lawrence Summers, but I mean, he made it clear. He said, "Well, looking at this, he's pretty much sure that these tariffs are going to cause a recession, and he foresee that at least 2 million people will lose their jobs." Now that's crazy. So let's look at that, and let's say that's going to be, because a lot of investment houses actually are also following this route, saying that, well, now the probability of a recession suddenly increased massively. So if they're right, we're going to see a drop in economic growth. We're going to see a massive, massive increase in unemployment. And now we just had this example of iPhone, but now adding to the mix that suddenly we're not just sitting with inflation, we can sort of sit with a hyperinflation. Now that, I mean, you and I have been having this called not debate, because we've agreed since day one, we're going to see stagflation. So the probability, you know, for stagflation sort of increased in my view over the past 48, 72 hours. increase a hell of a lot. So stagflation, in my view, is sort of, and the gold price today is telling us that. Gold price up 3% is telling us, well, they see, you know, stagflation being written all over this.
Okay, just a very, very brief comment on tariffs and the history of tariffs. In 1922, it started. People don't quite realise what went on there. But as Truman says, there's nothing new in this world, only the history you don't know. So if you don't know this history, listen now. The Fordney-McCumber Tariff Act of 1922, America raised, it's called a tariff bill, really. And they raised tariffs to 40% on stuff being brought in to America. Now, Americans were clever, though. Then they offered very affordable loans to European countries. But eventually Europe caught on. And France, having had a 45% tariff on US automobiles, whacked it up to 100%. Spain raised its tariffs on American goods by 40%. And so it went on. Germany did the same. And Italy raised their tariffs on wheat. Sorry, the American agricultural businesses, farms in other words, lost $300 million, and that was a lot of money in the 1920s. Yeah. So this went on, then we had the Great Crash. 1930, what did America do? They signed another tariff bill, which was Smoot-Hawley. Now, Smoot-Hawley, of course, coming on the back of the Great Depression, and in the middle of the Great Depression, in fact, and the crash of 1929, it's exactly the sort of thing you shouldn't do. Mm. And it was because the farmers and the manufacturers of certain equipment asked Hoover to do it. So Hoover and the other two chaps, Smoot and Hawley, got together and said, right, they signed it. Between 1930 and 1934, world trade tumbled by 66%. Now, the backdrop is, of course, the Great Depression. So that could never happen today. A robust world economy wouldn't allow it. But the point is, it doesn't help. And if you look at any tariff initiative over the centuries, over the decades, doesn't work, Skalk. It only causes disaster. And we've got disaster written all over Wall Street.
Yeah, desperate times, desperate measures. They're sitting in a very, very difficult position because, as I mentioned, Trump, you know, 1.0 didn't sit with such a deficit, didn't sit with such, you know, yes, they had quite a bit of debt, but it wasn't to the extent that they currently. They need to start looking at reducing these deficits. Yeah, and tariffs was it. I think the U.S. are sitting between a rock and a very, very hard place. I think refinancing this debt is going to be very difficult. Unfortunately, this has been very, very bad for Japan because Japan, we know the story about Japan last year. Japan always had sort of a fixed, interest rate. And with inflation over the past few years, well, we need to start using inflation. We need to start using interest rates, increasing interest rates, and we start seeing it increasing slightly. We know the forecast is still that the Bank of Japan will be increasing rates, you know, going forward. But this is actually, I'm sorry for Japan now, because as we sit here, let's call it a quarter of the US debt are held by non-US countries. So it's quite a large portion. If you did the largest holder of US debt, you know, is Japan. They hold just more than $1 trillion worth of
they're getting
of
whacked.
Massively. Massive, massive, massive. Second largest is China. They've got about, let's call it $400 billion. But I wouldn't be surprised if this major sell-off that we've seen over the past 12 to 13 hours has been China. China saying, well, it's fine. We're going to use this $400 billion kitty that we've got, and we're going to start putting some pain, serious pain on the bonds, because then if they refinance, I mean, it's going to cost the US economy an arm and a leg to refinance at 4.5 or even higher levels. But yeah, it's interesting times for sure.
Certainly. Let's have a look at some interesting numbers today. The rand, it's all-time record lows against the dollar. Pains me to say so. Dollar rand, 1984. British pound against the rand, 26.35. Euro rand is 21.94. Oh, my goodness. So let's call it 22. Euro dollar, 110.63. The dollar is falling, tumbling, and the euro doing extremely well. Big move today, I have to say. The gold price, 3,086, $71 higher. I haven't got a fancy screen like yours, but mine says $71 or 2.4% higher. Platinum doing nothing, 917, barely changed. And palladium doing nothing, nothing happening there, barely changed, $892 per ounce. If we go to the rest of the commodities, the one that is very interesting, which I picked last year, but I was 4 months too early, and that was the demise of the oil price. Brent crude oil, $60.29, which is down 4%, Skull Glow. West Texas crude, 56.
You called that one. Let's
I know I did. Did I make any money out of it? You know the answer. $57.05 per barrel for West Texas crude, down 4.3%. And so it goes on. What other ones have we got? Steel and coal, all getting walloped. Iron ore, down 2.75%. Okay, let's have a look at some other numbers now. And I toss a coin. I'll say heads up, tails down. Okay, tails down, I'll say. S&P 500 futures. No, wrong. Up again. Up 0.2% to 5,031. This 5,000 level, I think, closing below there on two or three sessions, I think will be the key to the future of this market. At the moment, it's hovering. It's orbiting 5,000, Skunk. US 10-year Treasury bond yield, which we've been focusing on, 4.432%, which you couldn't have imagined 3 months ago. Bitcoin, 77,102. What's the South African 10-year, Skull? Because for some reason it's disappeared from my screen. Because it's obviously under pressure.
Oh, massive, massive. Remember, we went into 2025 with it trading below 9%. And here we're sitting today. It's 11.37, 11.37% as we sit here. So it's been a massive, massive movement in our long bond yields. And it can't be good. Can't be good at all.
No, it can't be. Bitcoin is 77,070, so about to break below 77,000. It's a near 2% move to the downside. What about the JSE indices, Skulk? I know the financials today looked horrible.
Yeah, with the rand, did what it did. And it's sort of a general sell-off in banks overall across the world. But, yeah, like you mentioned, the JSE financials, they actually ended the day just shy of 5%, down 4.63%. Let's go to JSE All Share, 82,486 points. That is down 2.1%. Top 40, 75,690. Down just over 2%. Resources with a little help from gold, and I think there were some of the platinum counters as well, but precious metals in general definitely helped the resource index, up 2.4%. Industrials down 2.31%. Look at the turnover. I mean, Lindsay, you mean yesterday we had a close to 46 billion day. Previous day we had a 45 billion day. Previous day before that, 44 billion today. Today, another 38 billion. So massive volume being moving through the market. One can argue that there's been some massive sellers. Sort of just get the hell out of any risky assets, but somebody's buying it. So that's major market movements as well as major size going through the JSE.
Individual stocks. I don't know what Assura is, but I assume it's something that digs things out the ground. But anyway, it's up 9.4%. Pan African Resources 8.3% higher. 6.3% higher. Anglo Gold Ashanti 5.6 up. Harmony up 5.5 nearly. And Goldfields up 3.33. Downside led down by the Blue Bank. Standard Bank 10.1% weaker. Ned Bank 8.6% down. Old Mutual down 8.4%. Tungela down 8%. These are numbers. I mean, I've been through the crash of 87 and 2008 and everything like that. But this is very different, Skulk. Very, very different indeed. This looks like it's got legs and it's not just a event-driven one-off or two- or three-month event where it just bounces back and we forget about it. This looks much, much more serious to me.
To me, this is you're right. And in why? Why? Because when we've seen these type of movements, you know, last time when we had the VIX and COVID trading at it's called over 50% levels, the one thing that the media started sort of murmuring in that period was, what type of recovery will we see? Will it be a V-shaped type of recovery? Will it be a U-shape, or maybe a W-shape, or some alphabetical shape type of recovery? Well, to date, we still haven't had any, let's call it major investment. I was talking about any form of recovery. But, I mean, I've been having Bloomberg running nonstop behind me. And the one thing that I keep on hearing is, you know, are we going to see the second leg down? Are we going to see a third or even a fourth leg down? And when these type of big investment houses, not talking about a what type of recovery, but how many legs down we're going to see. Man, yeah. You're right. I haven't seen these type of movements. I mean, you touched on the 1930s, and let's hope we're not seeing a history repeating itself of the 1920s, 1930s, because that was a horrible, horrible period. For now, I would say my advice is, if you're looking to try and buy the dips, be very, very careful. I see and foresee quite a few falling knives going around this type of market. Yeah. This is the type of market where you need to be just calm, collected, and if you're buying, by all means, buy for the longer term. But if you're buying to trade, be very careful.
Indeed. Bottom pickers often become cotton pickers, as one chap that I used to work with would say. So, Skulk, it's so nice to speak to you again. I really already am looking forward to next Wednesday, because who knows what happens in the interim 7 days. But whatever it is, it's going to be interesting. And I know that you'll cover it beautifully, as always. Skulk Lowe is a portfolio manager at PSG Wealth, Old Oak in Cape Town. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors, and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.